Hey there, I'm Steph.
And I'm Simon.
And this is The Food Fight, a frank discussion of food culture featuring Australia's top chefs, producers and experts.
We'll chat about real issues and go places others won't.
This podcast travels throughout the country and we acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which we gather and speak.
And we pay respect to elders past, present and emerging.
This episode we chat with Simon Tuohy about life before MasterChef, working at a cocktail bar in London, his experience of MasterChef and about embracing and championing vegetables. Let's introduce our guest, Simon Tuohy. For those of you who don't know, he's a friend from school in Canberra. Mate, thanks so much for joining us.
It's been a while, mate. We haven't seen each other for a long time.
Yeah, I know. And it's fucking fantastic to get you back on the podcast. We've been talking about it. And like, I didn't even know that you were into food until I saw you were on MasterChef. I was like, Simon's on MasterChef? What the hell? Like, someone told me.
And it's actually the same. I didn't know you were into food until...
get that a bit closer.
I didn't even know you were into food until about 6 months ago as well. So yeah. It's funny how the worlds align.
Yeah. So, like, I mean, the backstory is that we used to play footy together even before we started at school together. Like,
that's true.
We played footy Easties. At Easties when we were probably Easties. 8 years old. Younger, even.
That's right. Yeah, like it was five because Jeffers was there as well.
Yeah, you know, so we had a lot of stories. and then, we were like in each other's class through primary school, high school, and
never saw each other again once that finished.
Yeah, well, that's it. Then it's all over. Like, it's funny like that because we were not best mates when we were at school, but we were mates.
Yeah,
and then now all of a sudden things come back full circle, and we get to sit
really
here and talk.
We have to pick those brains as well and talk about where everyone is that you know and everyone is that I know.
Yeah, I know. We're gonna sit after this. We'll have a good old catch up. But mate,
I'll just drink.
We've got a usually doesn't have much interesting input anyway.
No, exactly.
It's gonna be a good podcast. I know.
So, like, let's start from the start because, I mean, we've done minimal chatting before even starting this and we've got minimal time. So, when did you first get into food? Like, because you moved to London and you started working in cocktail bars and stuff there. Tell us a bit about the cocktail experience first.
Well, the cocktail stuff started... I worked at Filthy McFadden's in Canberra.
I remember that.
Yeah.
Okay. That was a great bar.
That was really the last time we used to hang out, actually.
Yes, that's that pub. For sure.
Okay, yeah, so that was where you started. That's where learning to make... vodka lime sodas and lemon lime bitters and like what's in a, like how do you make that sort of thing, and then going, oh, I get it, and then opening cocktail books and going, oh, there's a whole new world. And another friend of mine, just name dropping because you know them, sorry Simon, I know you don't, Raj was an old grand boy from a few years above us. He ran Julep Lounge and I begged
Monica.
Him for a job and I was like, can I please, because I want to make cocktails, like it's so much more exciting than just pouring beer. And I was I think it was 3 years at Filthy's by that stage, and I was like, I'm kind of done with pouring it. Oh, it taught me speed and craziness, and it's a crazy, crazy environment. Anyway, so then Julep Lounge happened, and then that was amazing. Absolutely loved it. Then Knightsbridge happened, then Trinity happened, and then I finished university. I was like, what the fuck am I still doing here? Like, my parents moved out on me, and they moved up to Byron. Yeah. I was like, what am I doing in Canberra?
You're done, Simon.
This is shit.
Yeah.
I mean, I love it. I love the place now, but it you know, everyone grows up in their town, gets over it and moves on, and then probably, you know, falls in love with it again later on down the track. So I moved up to Byron to see my folks, worked up there, saved my money, then traveled across Europe for a year, across Asia, all the way from, you know, from Singapore at the start, all the way through India, all the way across into Turkey, all the way across into Europe. And then...
it's an epic trip.
It was a seriously epic trip. And I didn't know much about food then. I loved food, obviously, because I was a big eater. But it was always about bars. And I got a job at a bar called Kalukule. And that was, you know, long story, really long story short, that sort of where I cut my teeth in the cocktail, properly cocktail bartending, where I learned everything. I would go to a coffee shop every single morning at midday and read the history of cocktails until 4 or 5 o'clock when I started work. And then... prep shift and then work until 3 a.m. and I did that for 5 years.
Amazing.
So
really fell in love with it,
like, really deep. Like, I didn't like history at school,
no,
and then I found history and booze and I was like, this is something that's interesting, this is actually really cool because there's something deep about this. And I lied, it was 4 years. And then back to the question, which is really good, I'm going this massive roundabout way, I studied my master's in gastronomy.
Yeah, okay.
In Edinburgh, where I met my partner.
What does that look like? What does a master's in gastronomy look like?
Well, it looks
Edinburgh?
Like a 15,000-word dissertation I haven't done yet, but... but it.
Looking forward to that.
Oh my gosh, I'm just dreading it. So I think I'm just going to pass on in the end. But basically, it's a way too fast master's degree, master's degree in the history and science of food. Wow. Not about like chefing. You don't learn necessarily to cook. I mean, you know, all that sort of like in depth about stuff, but you learn about soil, you learn about history, you learn about the commons, you learn about everything, you know, everything that comes towards the background element of food and science. And it's really exciting because I think because I've been through them, and Simon, you know all this, of course, but, and of course you, Steph, but as in like knowing what it's like to be a chef, I didn't want to be in the kitchen. They scared me. They were angry fuckers, you know? Yeah, yeah. And I'd been around them for too long. I'd watched them for too long. And so what I really wanted to do was sink my teeth in food, but not be in a kitchen.
Yeah, okay. Yes. And so...
it's a hard thing to balance because you said the kitchen is not about cooking. Right. It's so many things other than cooking, other than even learning about food.
Right.
It's regimented. You know, it says quite a lot. It's a trade.
Yeah.
So yeah, trying to keep connected to food without being in a kitchen can be, you know, find interesting paths doing that.
Yeah.
So did you, like when you were doing that, did you have an idea of in what capacity you wanted to work with food when you finished your gastronomy masters and
no idea.
Having all this hospitality experience under your belt too, which would only be beneficial with whatever you kind of choose?
Yeah, yeah. I actually had no idea. I think I wanted to become a food historian.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Especially in the UK. Like food historians in the UK, yeah. It's awesome, right?
Yeah, right.
Food historians in Australia, you know, if you go into indigenous cultured food, yeah, sick. Yeah. But it's all handed down through word of mouth.
Mm.
There's very little writing about it.
Yeah, I mean, if you did the history of Australian... you know,
modern Australian.
Post-colonization, you end up back in Europe.
Yes, exactly so right. So that really excited me there. But then it got to the stage where I finished my master's. Finished. And I was like, well, there's nothing holding me in the UK anymore. There's no reason to be here.
Yeah.
And so I came back to Australia where I started working in a bar down the road and got back into hospitality because I knew it was safe and I felt comfortable.
Yeah. But you knew you were sort of done with bars? Was that the idea? Moving on from bars to food? Yeah.
I mean, I worked on the floor. I didn't work in a bar anymore. I refused to work in a bar.
Yeah, okay.
And the place I was working was a dispense bar. So,
you
know, I was working for tickets. And that's boring as batshit in the first place. So I just ended up working and serving drinks and food on the floor and quite enjoyed that because it was, you know, exciting in a way. And I get to chat with people and be face value. But yeah, the whole creative side of things, I kind of burnt out pretty bad. I definitely burnt the candle at both ends in the UK.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. As many people in hospitality wherever it might be. It's
unforgiving, especially in those really great bars. They are open till 1 a.m., 2 a.m., 3 a.m.
Yeah.
And it doesn't stop when the customers go.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
There's the hour of clean down, and then there's, you know, what do I need for tomorrow? There's, you know, it's unrelenting.
There's the hour of drinking.
Yeah, exactly.
There's the hour
of after
drinking.
Yeah,
and then there's going back to mate's place. Yeah, and then you wake up at 10 a.m. to start work again. That must be the biggest repeat going on in this conversation, I reckon.
It's amazing. It's like no other industry like that. I mean, we've talked about...
But I mean, it's exciting for a time.
Yes.
And it's nice having, you know, a group of people you can go for a drink with after work and everyone's on the same page. But it's tough to do it for a long time.
Mm. Yeah. It's interesting too because I can remember the emotion of just... burning the candle at both ends in hospitality, like it's draining. It's like hard. You miss your friends' weddings. You're always tired. Mm. And then like when you do get the odd day off, like you fucking cherish it like nothing else. Yeah. You're like, yes, I get a day off. Like and
it's never two in a row.
Yeah. No. Yeah.
And it's spent either sleeping or it's like, oh, I better do my washing.
Yeah.
Clean the house.
Like I can remember that, but then you also like always have such fond, I do anyway. Mm. Like when I do think about every, like all the hours I spend in kitchens or on the floor and the people that I worked with, like the relationships I developed and stuff like that. It's just this, you know, it's like any other, it's different to any other job.
And food is interesting to talk about. So being around like-minded people who are into food, into drink, that's just super interesting anyway. That's where the friendships are formed. So again, going back, it's something it's exciting and it's a lot of people want to get into, but the realities of actually working in that front end of hospitality is hard. So trying to find other ways to be connected with food can be difficult.
If you come out the other end, you know, whether that's mentally or physically or emotionally or, you know, as a business, and you come out the other end and you grow up at some stage and you go, oh, shit, I actually still love this and I haven't fully burnt out yet. And I've become, and I think COVID's probably one of the major reasons why that's people are starting to change the way they're looking at things.
Yeah.
And they're becoming a little bit more self-minded.
Yeah, I've had a little minute to stop.
Yes, that's right. And
be like, that's right. People found out what it was like to have a week off. Or longer.
3 days off in a row.
Yeah. Yeah. What the fuck do I do? So we're in Melbourne and you're working in hospitality and things like that. Hadn't really decided on where you wanted to go with it at this point. Just sort of working. Was this the point when you first applied for MasterChef? Like around this time?
Yeah, I think it was maybe a year.
Yeah.
I was here for a year. So I was working in a bar and I met my partner. So my partner I met in Edinburgh, but no relation. And then turns up in Melbourne.
Right.
Lives here. And then, you know, yoga teacher. So there's a wonderful holistic part that I really needed in my life to change around my burning candle we talk about. And there was a massive, I guess this might have been the dark hole. Oh, that's right. I was trying to open up an ice cream shop. Jesus, I forgot. I put that out of my eyes. So I was trying to open up an alcoholic ice cream shop by a guy in Edinburgh as well. And he came over and we were going to open it up in Fitzroy, make it a super niche thing. Like I'm talking 7% triple choc ice cream with fucking choc chips on top. And it was going to be boozy, full of like, you know, whiskey. And because it's used in food, the tariffs are less. And so you don't have to pay any. So it was a really funky idea. Super into it. And then he just fucked off back to Edinburgh, left me sitting with my dick in my hands. So, you know, and I was really pissed off about that. So that lost me a good whack of coin. Yeah, good that's time. That's a thing. That's a thing. And so there's that dark hole.
Yeah.
And, you know, trying to find an apartment, all this sort of style stuff, just sort of like fell on top of each other constantly. And then Georgie came around and was like, hello. And we sort of started dating. It was great. And it was quite a fast relationship. She sort of sat me down on the bed and was like, fill the fucking form in.
Really?
Like, I was like, I think I want to do MasterChef. I started filling the form in when I was in Edinburgh. And she wasn't on the scene, of course. And then I was like, oh, yeah, try to fill it in Edinburgh. But, you know, I went past the first page and there was 8 more pages to go. And she's like, fill the fucking thing in. You're not leaving this bedroom until we do it. So every single night, we fill the form in page by page until it was all done.
Mm. Yeah, right.
And that's how it was. This weird sort of like, I was working as a national ambassador for Mr. Black. God, I've really blacked out a lot of this fucking part of my like this central part, which was a great was
it's
a
like
great
a little
job.
Therapy session.
It
we're
really
having.
Is. Maybe it is.
Unpack some.
Where's the tissues in the middle of the table, by the way? No, that was a great job. I really, really love Mr. Black. Great product, great team, great brand, the whole lot. And so I was like, right, this is the first time I've lived in a country for longer. Well, I'm going to plan on. I have not owned anything. I've been backpacking around the world for such a long period of time. Lived in a country for such a long period of time. I haven't owned a couch. I haven't owned a TV. I haven't owned a car. I haven't owned a bed, let alone, you know, I haven't even owned a cup of freaking like a glass, pair of glasses or martini glasses.
Yeah.
So I was like, I'm gonna work for Mr. Black for 3 years. I'm gonna save up. I'm gonna do this amount each year, and we're gonna be great. I'm gonna buy a house, and that's the plan. I'm back on top, baby. I'm gonna have some solidification in my life. And then I fucking went to MasterChef and all the savings went out the window, got paid fuck all, and I'm not doing anything, any sort of like future freaking planning to save for a house. But, you know, what a journey.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, let's talk about it. Do you remember, take us to when you found out, well, confirmed that you were going on?
What type of things do they ask in those forms? Because like, obviously they're looking
darkness
like,
questions.
Let's go. Yeah,
what's your atmosphere? Yeah. Right. If you're like, Tell us about your most emotional time with your family.
Wow.
Really?
Yeah. Because it's a huge psych assessment.
Yeah, right.
Mm.
If they get you on there for, it was 8 months in total for me.
Wow.
From start to finish. And then I did it again.
For the first one. Or the second one.
Second one was 6 months. So, you know, you've got to make sure you're mentally prepared.
Yeah.
Or they've got to make sure you're mentally prepared.
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, and so that's what it was. And the process went, and I'm not, like, it wasn't easy. It wasn't easy, but for some odd reason, I just felt as though with everything I was going on, it felt quite simple.
Yeah.
And it was like, I filled the form in, I got called up, I was going to New York to Simon Gibson's wedding. Right.
Shout out, Simon.
Yo.
Another Simon.
And so I couldn't do the Melbourne thing. I was going to Hong Kong for Mr. Black, so I couldn't do the Perth one. Oh no, the Sydney one. And so I went to Adelaide to do my auditions.
Mm.
So I filled the form in, got asked to do auditions. went to Adelaide, did the auditions, got called back for the second audition, did the second audition the next day, waited 3 months, got called to go on the show.
Wow. What was it like when you got called to go on?
It was really weird. I mean, have you ever remembered going into, I don't know, when was the last time you felt like chronic anxiety? Like, I don't know if you have any mental health issues, yeah. But that feeling of like nervousness, like yeah. a grand final of a sports game.
Yeah, or okay.
Like, you know, going to show your artwork at a thing and hoping people like it. You know, yeah. All this sort of stuff. That, like, and fall. Mm. And you just got, if I stuff up. And then the weight of like millions of people watching scares yeah, dude. You a lot.
It's the biggest fucking show. It's yeah, the biggest show. Massive.
Yeah. And it's not even the biggest show in like, for Australia, it's small, as in the sense, like, it's still the biggest show for how many people view it.
Yeah, yeah.
But in India, 7 million people watch MasterChef.
Yeah.
I mean, and then in Pakistan, the same.
MasterChef brand.
Yeah, like it's
massive. It's the most exported BBC originally, or British show in the world. So it's not just Australia watching BBC, is it?
Yeah. The original one was fucking hilarious.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
The old Lloyd Grossman one. You're going to go back OG.
Yeah.
It was like
pretty much black and white. It was 87, wasn't it? Something like that? I can't remember
what
it was.
Wow. It went for years and then it ceased to be. Because it was just like you'd invite like some home cooks on and they'd do a couple of dishes. I think that was it.
Like, I had no idea.
It was nothing like it is now. It got rebranded a decade ago in the UK and it just took off.
Yeah, right.
Right kind of timing with all the chefs and people's interest in chefs. And
we're this, we've got our own, I think, well, basically the modern MasterChef is the Australian MasterChef. And so all the Singapore MasterChef, I think it's Malaysian MasterChef and Indian MasterChef, they all base it now around the Australian.
Whereas
the UK have kept their style.
Yeah, it's a bit different, man.
Yeah.
So, like, I don't know, where's a good place to start? I guess, like, What does it feel like when you take us to like sort of first day, like when you're actually on the show and it's like, shit, I'm in this competition. Like, obviously you've got producers and stuff who are prepping you for it. Like they're telling you what's going on and things like that. Like, I guess how much of it is it like, cause I assume it's like, it's such a big deal. Like, are you 100% invested into this competition from day one? Like, or is it like, fuck, I'm on this show and like it's not that big of a deal if I don't win? Because the thing that they do well as producer, a production team, it's like the way that they invest the viewer is by creating investment from the from the guests and things like that. 100%. Like, it's like you guys look like you guys are fucking just stressing out behind those hobs.
It is. So you like, I thought you'd have to be invested to be on the show, right?
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
But then apparently there's people on the show that are like, oh no, I don't give a fuck.
Yeah, okay.
Like, if I leave tomorrow, you know, it is what it is. And you're like, but why the fuck are you here? Give it to someone else who gives a shit. You know, like, I don't know what I want from the end of it, but like, at least I know I want to be trying my skills or whatever the real result is, because, you know, why would you go on in the first place? I'm not 100% sure why would you go on the show. I liked the show. Did I want to get famous at the end of it? Fuck it. Who doesn't? But like, what did I want to get from it? I wanted to learn a bucket load.
Yeah.
Like, I wanted to learn heaps in the fastest way possible. And yes, that's the stupidest way to do it, because slow as any chef would understand, trying to get any sort of culinary skill is by learning from scratch and really working your way through the processes. But from the background of the cocktail world, I was like, fuck it all, let me just go as deep as I possibly can. If I'm gonna sink, then so be it. I'll go to culinary school and work it out myself, and work it out from there. Or if I swim, then amazing, where's this gonna lead me? And I can also read and continue from here on my personal journey, which is really cool.
But so you did learn a shitload.
Yeah, I did learn a shitload.
Like, I assume you would be learning all the time from the people around you, from the judges and from the guests that come in. Like, it's crazy.
Well, you don't... They always promised masterclass in the house we stayed in, but we never really got masterclasses. We never really got taught. But what we did learn is learn from ourselves and each other. I mean, there's a bunch of amateur cooks, so the stuff we're cooking anyway is relatively based on our own historical knowledge, especially if it's cultural, you know? Or what we've read, or whatever, or what cookbooks we've brought along.
Yeah, yeah.
And we weren't allowed computers, we weren't allowed phones, we didn't have any internet, we weren't allowed the TV to on Channel 10 anyway to watch any of the ads and stuff like that if it was on. And we the only study we're allowed to do was of the 300 cookbook library we had, if not more.
That's
it might
cool.
Have been 500 cookbook
that's
library
cool.
in the house.
And the access to that alone is pretty
well,
awesome.
That's right. And you look at
have any Quicksand books in there?
Yeah. I just get some of them
I
in.
I doubt it.
You'd be bloody surprised. There was everything in there. If I had not knew I had to look out for something, I would have only
if I see my duck egg dish on MasterChef and they've got the Illawarra cookbook.
Yeah. Maybe.
Well, that's right.
I wonder if they did.
Yeah. We're all in hotels now. It's all changed.
Yeah, okay.
How much do they prep you with what to expect? None at all?
None. They might give you a hint if like Sweet Week is going to come up, which was great because I still fucked it anyway. But, you know, they might give you a nod.
Yeah.
But in fairness, nothing. And they don't give you any time. So what you see when they say ready, say you go on the show, add a piss break in between that, and that's how long you get to think about what you're going to cook.
Wow. Mm. Far out.
Yeah. And the food, before anyone goes, the food is room temperature, but the sauces are kept warm.
Yeah, okay.
How's that? But the thing is, the judges are tasting the whole way through the cook.
Yeah,
like they're walking around tasting all your food.
Yeah.
And you've got 35 people looking at the screens on behind the scenes that you know going on. And so those people are relaying onto the judges going, hey, check this out, check that out. This person's doing this. You know, he's split this sauce, or he's, you know, burnt this side of thing, or he's, you know, spat in the food, whatever it could be, right? Never got away with that one. But
Did you know before kicking off on there that you wanted to champion veggies in your cooking while you're on the show? Like, when did you get into that world?
Again, it was a bit of an aha moment. My partner is veggie. Her brother is vegan. Mum's, you know, follows the fam. But is also the same. And I was like, you know, I think there's a lot of things where everything's kind of done to death, and what things haven't been done to death, there's this element of like plant-based eating. And I don't mean forcing it down to people's throats. I mean finding stuff grown from the soil and going, God, that is amazing. I can't believe that cabbage is purple. Like, how whack is that? And now what can I do with that no one's ever thought of before? Mm. And it was on the starting wave of the rose cauliflower. Like, that's when it sort of started. I was like, this is perfect. And also, what no one's done, let's find the most stupidest thing someone could do and let's try it. And that's making a smokehouse for vegetables. You know, like, it just doesn't necessarily. People are like, why would you do that? Not because it's not possible, but because everyone associates smokehouses with fucking long cooked meats.
I mean, people don't put the same amount of effort into veg as they do in meat.
You're right.
Just like, there's not the same process, not the same technique. And
and there's less care.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. And it's why is that? Why wouldn't you take as much care? Even a lot of, you know, great restaurants, great chefs, their veg menu is a bit of an afterthought.
Oh my God, it's nuts.
It's to keep people happy.
And I want to do that. So I go to restaurants I went to Gaia in Gertrude Street, and we got the veg menu. Fucking delicious. So good. Like, they make made this most beautiful tofu dish, and they get every single part of the process and recreate a dish through this final thing. So it's this awesome story, right? But then we go to another restaurant of the same hatted quality.
Yeah.
And it's shite. So I know I'm really going back.
That's okay.
The microphone must be driving you nuts.
Yeah, you're right. This whole time. When I'm on camera. At least you know what I'm doing when I'm fiddling.
Yeah.
I mean, the results you get if you put the same effort in, but we did a... But I love parsnips, one of my favorite dishes. And I'm like, I'm going to take the same care as like a piece of brisket with a parsnip. So I did like brining and then steaming and then smoking and then glazing.
Yes.
And it comes out and it's just like a pretty special thing. And you can get as much kind of joy and as much kind of creativity with veggies as meat.
Yeah.
Which again, and it must just be a kind of historical thing because chefs generally are always pushing for new thing, next thing. But there's a bit of a blind spot when it comes to veg a lot of time.
I think so dishes. Too. And now it's come to the stage where I actually get really excited about ordering the veg dishes because I want you to fucking take me on a journey. I know if I go to a good restaurant, there's going to be some sort of braised based meat. There's going to be a really slow based, I don't know, brisket or maybe like a bone in like ribeye or some sort of like short rib or a piece of duck or you know what I mean? And I know the duck's going to be served with some fucking fruit because it's obviously served with fruit. And some sort of jus or glaze on top of that that's been fucking... And, you know, I know that's going to be there. And that's a massive generalization.
Don't you might even get duck served with radicchio and Illawarra plum or something like that. And it's just like, ugh. Like, again with the fucking duck.
That's one of my favorite dishes.
Illawarra plum. Putting my foot in the right there. Illawarra plum is something that no one... You know, that is a delicious fucking ingredient. So don't
changing
worry
the game
one.
That way.
No, that was changing actually perception. A good dish, Simon.
You know what I'm saying.
Yeah, I know.
And I just think so many times when you go to a place...
I mean, that happens even more with veg. Like, how many restaurants when it's, you know, you're going to see beetroot, goat cheese and pine nuts?
Well, let's flip this on its head.
They're
right?
Delicious.
Oh my God, let's flip it on its head. I don't want any more honey carrots in my life. Yeah. You know what I mean? I don't want any more fucking Caesar salad made in a different way. Like, I don't want any more of that. Like, the torn iceberg with a massively over the top dressing. Go away. Like, all these sorts of things. Not go away. They are good. They're really good. Yeah. But I don't want them.
Yeah.
I just think there's so much more to it, that's exciting. Yeah, you know, even the cauliflower steak, that thing still excites me. Like, I think that's still great because you're doing it. But at the same time, like, there's this...
Which is really cool. Like following you on Instagram and stuff like that, I've noticed, like, you really seem to be experimenting a lot with the way you're cooking and stuff, like techniques, trying to... What was that fucking grits you made the other day that you put on there?
Buckwheat, popped buckwheat grits.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, that was sick. So I did this. I did some work with Sourcebulk Foods. Hi, Sauce. Amazing people, by the way. Bye there. So yeah, it was buckwheat grits, and it was super cool because I did this thing where I decided to buy, you know, 400 grams of popped buckwheat, which I thought was hilarious. Like, great, just to practice. I don't know what for, just because.
Right? Yeah.
Stuff you do when you're a chef.
I always see stuff like that.
Fucking
like,
buy random shit. Let's try that. Yeah. Anyway, so of course, because it's popped, it comes out 400 grams is like 6 giant jars of buckwheat. You know, so it's like this thing. I was what am I going to do? So literally about 6 months later, I've still got them untouched in this fucking set of jars, right? And I was like, what am I going to do with that? I've been reading a lot of Southern cuisine recently, and I find that, and obviously American, not Australian, but that's a fascinating world in itself. And I was like, right, well, if you can do a popcorn or a corn grits, then why couldn't you do something popped? And we did this thing where you pour in the stock, which is a really really hearty sort of super umami mushroom stock with heaps of kombu and stuff like that, right? And then you pour in only like a small amount of the grits, or a small amount of the pop buckwheat, and then you've got to keep refreshing. Otherwise, it just soaks up all the liquid and turns into sludge, right? So you have to keep making it really quite fresh, and then you pass it, and then you cook it back in, right? And at the same time, I've been working with Onions Australia, doing some dishes with them. So I've been working on this new smokehouse menu for Black Pearl, and working on this really like burnt onion style dish, right? Sick, everyone's done it, I know, but I'm doing it, so fuck off. And and it worked. Like, it was amazing. So I passed it through, made it super silky, like kept pushing it, and then put some oat milk just to sort of thin it out a little bit, then had these like really slow, jammy onions on top of that. And it was banging. Like, it was super banging.
So that's like, just sort of goes to that point of like experimenting and innovating and the world that's out there for vegetables that's still sort of untapped. I mean, we live in this weird, interesting world with food where like, you know, gastronomy has been around for so long and we've been following tradition for so long, and it's only like, you know, in a more recent generation that things are being really, really pushed. Like, I mean, until Josh and Ireland came along, we didn't know what was possible with fish, really. Right. You know what I mean? Like, sort of, I mean, Japanese techniques and things like that do get passed through and stuff like that. But, like, it takes people to be really focused on innovation.
I mean, so it comes down to customer demand. Like, the fact there is I think Australia's got the biggest, the fastest growing vegan community in the world.
Yeah. So, along with South Africa.
Wow.
Which is really random. I thought that would be barbecue heavy.
Yeah, that seems counterintuitive. but yeah, I mean, now there is people are eating more plant-based, and even meat eaters are trying to eat less meat, and we realize that's probably one of the best ways to go. Yeah. There is opportunity now to push, mainly to still make money. You can always push, but can you open a restaurant that serves that?
Yeah.
And I think, we're kind of realizing the amount of flavor and the depth you can get, like onions alone, you can get so much flavor out of them. Like, it's ludicrous. Fuck.
And that's the thing, like, and you know, the two things on this one, you know, you got a butcher, you got a meat chef, right? You got a fish, like Josh Nyland, of course. And then the vegetable chef is like, oh, what the fuck, you're a vegan chef? No, I just fucking love cooking with vegetables.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you could take, what I did the other day, fermented whole cabbages. There's this amazing dish, and I can't remember, it's on Leichhardt Street. Anyway, famous. Anyway, so I took this baby cabbage, tiny little number, red one, fermented it for a week in a really low salt brine. So it didn't come out sort of like real acid, and then deep fried it. And fuck, I just, you know, and then I was looking at Mark Best the other day, and he did this wombok where he rubbed it in sesame oil, cut it in half, rubbed the cut side, put it in cut side down, and roasted it for 2 hours. So I was like, sick. Love that. It lost all its moisture, but internally it's acidic. Externally it's sweet. So I was like, what else can I do this with?
Yeah.
You know, cut a cabbage in half, rub it in the same oil, cook it for 4 hours. and it literally turned from a full size cabbage half the size, and the flavor you get out of that is banging, and the bottom of it is turns into caramel, and it's awesome. You know, taking persimmons, and you know, you make black garlic by fermenting in a dehydrator for 3 months or whatever, do the same thing with persimmon. That's fucked.
Yeah,
like that has turned into jam. Black jam.
There's
amazing
of persimmon flavor.
We used to wrap persimmons in beeswax and age them.
Stop.
And then, and to the point then,
Stop. I'm like, how excited you're getting about this.
And yeah, like, and when after like a month, we'd crack them open, and we'd like, that was basically the dessert. We'd just scoop out like the two sides on the plate. I don't know what we did it with. But like, yeah, it was just that was done.
So can you do this? And don't tell anyone on that, because this is something that I'm working into now. Is what about, you talk about like rubbing meats in fat, of course, to blanket it. You do the same thing with fish. What, like, I've been hanging red purple carrots in my fridge for the last couple of weeks just to dehydrate them and see how they go. Like, what is the chances of aging vegetables in this sort of way and rubbing them in their own fat? It can't be meat based. It has to be completely plant based.
I've thought about this, because I was like, could you like would there be benefit of dry aging a carrot? Because you've all had like a carrot where you're like, oh, that's an old carrot, but like what's the chemical breakdown of that?
Right.
But yeah, like beeswax. I mean, yeah, people do meat in that, but like that could be
yelling in your ear. Sorry. You're like,
but there's definitely like, I mean, maybe not root veg, because maybe they do lose their kind of a lot of sugars. But definitely.
But you look at the Japanese style of the north; they do their radishes. They smoke them for ages until they fully dehydrate, and they pickle them.
But I mean, this is the thing: like we know these things work with meat because there's history and then there's scientific research behind it. Is there anyone doing this with vegetables?
I've got to start talking. I've got this guy. Shut up, I'm not telling anyone.
We'll
talk about it after.
Stuff like this is like, I would really like to get involved in universities in the future and be like, can you make all these weird ideas I have at 2 a.m.? Can we play with them? Can we do them?
Well, you know what I'm going to say out loud. So a friend of mine is one of the head scientists for the CSIRO food tech place.
Awesome.
Right around the corner from my house.
Wow.
And I just went out there and had a look at, I got a few things going on, and I'll chat with him.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I'll get back to you.
Yeah, just so many little questions. You're like,
because it'd be so good. Thing.
Yeah, just find all the stuff.
Such stuff.
But I mean, yeah, the world of vegetables is vegetables. Awesome. When you did I say vegetables?
Yeah, yeah.
Vegetables.
At the age of 10 years old, vegetables are good.
Vegetables are awesome. Eat your vegetables, kids.
We've got 10 minutes until we need to wrap.
Sorry.
I need to talk. No, this is great, because with the limited amount of time we have and the amount of stuff we've got to talk about, we just do what we're doing, which is fantastic. Yeah. But I do want to talk about two things before we finished. Tell us about Sustainable Earth Network.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Talk about that, shouldn't I?
Yes.
Yeah, my baby.
Yeah.
So I opened a smokehouse, plant-based smokehouse, October, a couple of years ago. And I met the photographers that did the opening of it all. So they were just there. My agent got these two photographers in, and I was like, hey, how you doing? And he actually studied food science as well, which is really cool. And his partner. And we just got chatting. Literally just got chatting. And then a month later, we talked about this concept. He's like, oh, what about Sustainable Earth Network? And I was like, that's a freaking great thing. I think it's fantastic. He's like, cool, let's wait out this busy period and let's get to it. And I was like, cool. And then 2 weeks later, like, no, sorry. It's all that water I'm drinking. 2 days later, he's like, stuff waiting. Let's start filming.
Mm.
And so we did our first season of Sustainable Earth Network, which is on YouTube under Sustainable Earth Network. And called the whole thing, focusing on basically the concept of the whole company is focusing on past farming and production practices and bringing them to the future, bringing them forward, as opposed to putting that Band-Aid on, right, to try and fix something else, like making pink algae for cattle to lower the methane, but you can't serve that necessarily to free range because they eat grass, so you can only feed that to feedlots, which means you're making feedlots okay.
Mm.
You know, it shits the fucking shit out of me. And that happens across all boards because money's there. So we're trying to look at ways that people are trying to do natural, beautiful, harmonious things that are working really well with the environment, that permaculture sort of ethic.
That's the way, man. Like, we can keep fucking up our world in trying to figure out the best way to make money, but then like inject a little bit of sustainability into everything. But unless you think about the bigger picture,
But I mean, you need modern you need to, like I said, bring in the old ways into a modern world, because totally. We still need to feed a lot more people than when these practices were in things. So there's so many issues with it, and it, yeah,
well,
So what's the vision? What's the, you know, is it as much about amplifying the people doing the right job?
Yeah, that's it. So we're putting it through a way that I think is really, although we in this industry now know there's a lot of media, for the people out there, media isn't necessarily the biggest. I mean, it's there, but there's so much more to scream about.
Yeah.
You know, it reaches such a large target market that we're after. And people, especially young people, are coming around that way. So we're basically online at the moment. And we're sticking to that because that's where a lot of our, I don't know why I did that. We're sticking to that because that's where we know people will engage.
Yeah.
However, if we can, you know, we have the ability to sell to Netflix, to sell to try and sell to someone else that isn't online, and also to any other channel, basically media-based channel, which would be really good because we have the equipment, we've got the camera crew, we've got the editing systems, we've got, you know, the film people and rah, 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 rah. So the idea from this is to not just stick it to one thing, but if you have an idea and you think this is something that's going to be amazing and you have the charismatic level to be able to produce this in front of the screen, then let us know.
Yeah.
And we have the quality to do it. We have the product.
Yeah.
So we'll make a show with you. And now, obviously, you're not going to make any money and we're not going to make any fucking money. But if we can sell it, then amazing. I mean, if you look at the way Vice produces their news, none of their news is on a news channel.
Yeah.
It's on millions or... Sorry, it's a bit of an exaggeration. It's on 100 people around the world creating product that they've taught themselves. There's certain way of selling their news. That's how you do it. You take you in. We'll teach you how to do it as people who present that way, also known as people who go and work with, you know, anyway, journalists. So, you know, this is our form of journalism. Go off and do it, and then they just keep producing this network, this constant web of amazing stuff, and which I prefer watching than watching sort of like, you know, any news on any sort of base TV. So we want to do that with what the Sustainable Earth Network is.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Okay.
Through sustainability of food.
Last couple of ones. Tell us about your show, Freshly Picked.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
you got a TV show too?
I do. We just got signed for another 2 seasons. So
amazing. Awesome.
Another 60 episodes. Really, really happy. Super excited about it. Purely plant-based. We have the only two, and I'm don't fact check me on this, but we have the only two plant-based shows in Australia, and that's Freshly Picked and Sustainable Earth Network. And out of that, everyone's too afraid.
I
believe, and I'm going to throw that out there and tell me not, but you know, everyone's too afraid to not add butter.
Yeah.
Or to try and think of a way to not have to add eggs. You know?
Yeah.
Fuck it. Try not.
Yeah. Awesome.
So that's great. So Freshly Picked is doing really well. Well, I think it's doing really well.
Channel 10.
Channel 10, 3:30. Yes, love it. End of school days. Get your kids home from school.
The new Big Huey.
Grab the...
No. He was always on at 3:30 in the afternoon.
Same company used to do Big Huey. Well, he's into it. I shouldn't say
There's
anything.
A history.
There is a history. Yeah, that's an amazing one. Love it.
To finish, have you found what you want to do now?
Oh, so much.
Right.
Oh, so much. Mm-hmm. I finish, you know... Again, people, you go, both have done media before, and this, I finish a 10-hour filming day and I go, that was the best day of my life. That was awesome. And I go home to my partner, who is the most amazing human being in the world, you know, to my dog, who is the most amazing puppy, you know, you could ever ask for. You know, so it's, for now, I am complete. Still not taking an income, but you know, that's what happens when you try to start a business and try to get people to sort of engage in what you do. But fuck, I love it.
Yeah.
I couldn't ask for anything better. I have a bit of a, what's that called? Imposter syndrome going on here. You know.
I was going to ask about that.
Most successful people do, it seems.
Yeah, like, but I'm also, you know, there's chefs who hate us because I got a MasterChef and then I've created this thing. You know, fuck you. Go do it yourself, you dickhead. You don't have to wait for me to be angry at me to not do it.
I think it's
yourself.
The MasterChef contestants who are like, I just always wanted to be a chef. And it's like,
You
get a job. Like, there's so many jobs going. Like, I think it's like it's realizing it's a tool for working in food outside of kitchens. I think it's the chef part when it's like, you know, you might go and be a chef from this, and it's like we're all chefs and like, I think that's where
chefs
get
the god complex
it.
From it as well. That they get, you know, they think that shit don't stink and rah 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 and
But it's hard, you know, like, because chefs slog it out, you know, and you can see it. It's a fucking hard industry and stuff like that. And, you know, there are probably chefs out there who are like, why don't I have a profile? Like, I work hard and I've got awards and my businesses are successful and things like that. And, you know, having a profile allows you to elevate your business and all that sort of stuff. Yeah. So
go further, you know, open another one, whatever you want to do.
And,
right.
But that's the, like, the hard thing for you is that you have to, you know, you have to walk in with a profile.
Well, I also, and then I also shouldn't say what I said before, and I will backtrack, because I did my, I started at 15 in hospitality.
Exactly.
And I finished at, you know, I'm still not finished. It's the only job I've ever done. I did 6 months as a travel agent and I told the manager to go fuck herself and got fired. So I went straight back to hospitality again. Yeah, that's my stint. There. And so I did my hours. And did I get to where I am now by doing those hours? No. Did I want to do what I was doing now by doing? Yeah, absolutely. I want to do exactly what I was doing now back when I was in London doing that sort of stuff. Maybe in the booze industry. I was writing TV shows, media-based shows when I was there. And I was doing that when I was working at Knightsbridge, you know?
Yeah.
So I wanted to be where I was. Mm. And I got given that amazing kickstart. So I take it back. I'm the asshole. I shouldn't have said what I said, because it's really hard for those who want to create a profile like what you said and try to get it like that.
Yeah, but at the same time, it's like,
don't go back on what you said before, because now that makes me have to
I'm not. No, I'm not. I'm not. But like, I think that the thing that separates everything is that, like, whether it's in media and whether or not you get a leg up through an opportunity like MasterChef or anything, if you don't do the work afterwards, then you're not getting anywhere. Like, you can either choose to grab the bull by the horns after that opportunity and try to make it your life, or you can go back to working in hospitality. You know, there's a lot more MasterChef contestants out there who have faded into obscurity than ones that are still.
I think there's some ex-MasterChef contestants are doing interesting stuff in their place. I think another thing that, I mean, this bothers me a little bit is that media in Australia are much quicker, and it makes complete sense. They're much quicker to go to a MasterChef contestant for a spot on anything than they are an actual chef.
Yeah,
but it's of course they are. Like, who's got the bigger profile?
Well, that's the annoying thing, right?
It's all about the viewers and the making money and the media. So of course it's going to be that way.
Yeah,
but I think Australia is particularly fond of MasterChef contestants, no matter what they're doing.
But you're right, you do fade into complete obscurity if you're not ready to do the work.
You
got to work, because they give you the pedestal, you're there. Like, hello, you know, what else do you want to do for you? We literally just gave you what you need to do whatever you wanted. Now, if you didn't have a vision, that's not our fault. You got to go and do the hard yards. And, and as I said, I haven't taken a paycheck in a very, very long time. And I am clutching at straws when it comes to anything, but I know what I want to do. And I know the direction I want to be at. And so I'm focused so hard on that. A few depressing moments here and there, but like, you got to pick yourself back up. And you go, God, I hate the fucking shitty metaphors I'm throwing out today.
Nah, it's good. No, like, because the thing is, I think that a lot of people, you know, would look at, you know, they just know you because you were on MasterChef and they watched it, and now they follow you on Instagram and they're like, oh, look at him. He's like so successful. And I want to be like, it's like, it's not, it's not just a matter of like standing in front of your camera and
you're not gonna have getting cash longevity.
Put in your pocket. We have to wrap up. Anything else you want to talk about before we're completely done?
No, same collaboration. Number one, collaborations with Pearl, which is really cool. A couple of places in India I'll be opening up at the end of the year. I'm allowed in there, but it'll probably be next year, obviously. That's an exciting
Watch Freshly
one.
Pick TV.
Watch Freshly, 3:30, Channel 10.
And mate,
and thank you both of us.
Thank you so much.
Sorry. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you so much for joining us. And I like, this conversation can go on for a long time, but I have a feeling it's the first of many.
Yes. So please,
mate, great to see you.
Thanks, man.
See everyone.
Hello, dear listeners. Steph here. Thank you so much for joining us for another episode of The Food Fight. If you want to get in touch with us, it's at The Food Fight Podcast on Instagram or thefoodfightpodcast@gmail.com. We want to hear from you and we want to talk to you. Please leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. That really helps. If you want to hit me up, it's quicksandfood.com or at quicksandfood on Instagram. And if you want to get in touch with Simon, it's Simon_Evans_TBD on Instagram. Thanks so much for tuning in, and we'll catch you again with another episode.